Welcome back to Cthulhu Light Show, your one-stop shop for nerd news you've already heard and opinions you don't need. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing John Carpenter's The Thing after an almost month-long sabbatical. Again, I am your host, Brian.
And I am the other host, Dakota, and somehow we're back.
Finally. We originally intended to do like a Mario episode to commemorate that anniversary, but we ran out of the time to do it, so here we are.
The actual excuse is I literally didn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Brian asked me to record, and I'm like, I don't really feel like it. So we took 3 weeks off.
Yeah. Anyway, so this episode is going to be kicking off our four-week October extravaganza, where we're going to be doing something Halloween or horror-themed for the entire month. We'll be starting this week off, like I said, with The Thing, which is widely regarded as one of, if not the best horror movies of all time. It was released in, I believe, 1982. Yeah, 1982. And it is an adaptation of a novella by John W. Campbell Jr. called Who Goes There? It was also technically a remake of a previous The Thing. I think that one was called The Thing from Outer Space, correct?
Oh, man, I thought I had this pulled up. It's,
No, it was The Thing from Another World. That's it.
Oh, that's it. All right. Yeah, that's the one.
So technically this is a remake of that, although that movie is, like, very cheesy and vastly different from the actual novella it's based on. So, you know, John Carpenter's version is generally considered a vast improvement. And then The Thing was unfortunately remade slash rebooted in 2011. But
that was
neither
a prequel.
Of us have seen that. It was a prequel, but it was also, like, very obviously, like, a remake. Like,
it's weird. It's a prequel that hits all the points of, like, the original.
Yeah, and it's named the exact same thing, so.
Oh, and also there's another remake coming out. It was gonna be 2020, but...
Mm-hmm.
2020 is weird, so it's probably going to be a little bit before we see whoever the hell's doing this new Thing movie.
Well, I think a longer version of the original novella was discovered, and that's what this new remake is supposed to be based on. It's supposed to be, you know, The Thing, or it's supposed to be Who Goes There plus more.
Oh my god, that's right, because it's coming back to me now. We talked about this before in one of our nerd news topics.
We did a nerd news segment on it, yeah.
One of the last ones, I think.
So yeah, very, very beloved film, although it was not at the time. Do you want to get into that a little bit, Dakota?
Right. Now, when the film first came out in 1982, it got incredibly negative reviews, quoting from something I have in front of me here. It's Wikipedia. It was described as instant junk and a wretched excess.
Delightful.
Yeah, which sounds like, you know, film critic. I don't like it. Fancy phrases. Filming lasted for like 12 weeks. It had a $15 million budget, which in 2020 money is, I don't know, more.
A lot more.
Yeah, inflation's a bitch. $1.5 million of that, so like 10% of the budget went into like the practical effects. But getting back into what I was talking about, like it's weird how these John Carpenter films. It's almost like he was kind of ahead of his time in a way. With like The Thing, with They Live, with Escape from New York, all these movies, they weren't super well received when they first came out, but have since gotten the recognition they deserve, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, the mega hit that made him like a household name was Halloween, and I believe that was partially how he got the budget he got to make The Thing, because I know at the time that was kind of an unheard of budget to spend on a horror movie. So, like, it was an investment, and John Carpenter was a little bit of, like, a superstar horror filmmaker at the time. But a lot of his later movies were not very well received. And this one wasn't either, as we've discussed.
Yeah, everyone talks about Escape from New York, but no one wants to talk about Escape from LA.
Yeah, I've always heard Escape from LA is a lot worse, though.
It's
So.
like it's weird. It's like 10 years later.
I've only seen like a fraction of all of his movies, so I can't speak very authoritatively on his whole career, but.
I've seen slightly more than Brian has, so I can pretend to speak authoritatively.
So how was the box office for this movie?
All right. So, according to boxofficemojo.com, let's see. There's no international box office, I guess, because we didn't release movies out, or we didn't keep track of it or something. I don't know. There's no international numbers, so just domestic, just in the U.S., it made $19.6 million against that $15 million budget. Which, once
So,
you add in like marketing and all that, that's well, I
not good.
don't. Well, the marketing probably a little cheaper for a Carpenter film, but between with the cult status of the film, it's made its money back eventually with re-releases and remakes, and there's gonna be a 4K Ultra HD re-release of the film coming out later this year, I think.
They generally say the rule of thumb is to double your budget to get your marketing costs. This thing did not probably even break even. It was a huge flop. I know a lot of people have explained its failure as like the ET effect, because ET, I believe, came out, if not in the same summer, then at least in the same year. And it was a smash hit, and it kind of colored how America wanted to interact with aliens in movies for that year. And so some people have argued that, well, after like your friendly little alien guy from the stars, people don't really want to see eldritch, viscerally disgusting alien trying to bring about the end of the world, you know. I personally have always kind of taken that argument with a grain of salt. I feel like one movie can't turn the world against a movie like this that is so obviously like extremely well done. I just have to assume that for whatever reason, like storytelling in cinema just wasn't in the place for this right at that particular moment. I don't think you can blame it all on E.T., but like, you know, Carpenter's more successful horror movies, like for instance, Halloween, are horror movies, but they have relatively happy endings. Like the protagonist survives and the bad guy is vanquished, at least temporarily. The Thing has a very kind of nihilistic, kind of depressing ending, which I think probably just wasn't lining up with what was coming out at the time in general, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's a real mood whiplash from like your happy-go-lucky first contact story, as opposed to your depressingly nihilistic first contact story here in The Thing.
Yeah, well, and I know from interviews that John Carpenter has very like mixed feelings about this movie, because I think on the one hand he views it as like the best thing he ever made, but on the other hand, I think he was really kind of crushed and confused by the critical reception it received. There was an interview I watched with Guillermo del Toro where he talked about how the first time he like sat down and had dinner with John Carpenter, he told him, "The Thing is the best horror movie of all time. It's my favorite movie ever." And John Carpenter's response was basically like, "What fucking good does that do me now?" And I was like, "Oh my God." Like, you think about it, like this was a dude at the height of his career, and a studio took a big risk on him and gave him this, you know, by the standards of the time, huge budget. And he produced like the best film he possibly could have made. And yet it still didn't matter. So I can imagine that that would be very crushing as a creator. So, you know, it's good that The Thing's getting all this appreciation in retrospect, but it's a shame that like John Carpenter didn't get the appreciation he deserved in the moment, you know.
Definitely, definitely. Like, even beyond Halloween, like, Carpenter's a very, like, at least he's getting, like you said, he's getting his recognition now, but now he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's not doing movies anymore, so.
Yeah.
What good does it do?
Right, right, right. Yeah, he's still supposedly working on that Dead Space movie.
I'm not crossing my fingers.
Yeah, he's been talking about that for like at least 10 years, and the man is an ancient chain smoker.
I mean, if it does happen, I'll watch it. I love Dead Space, but we're probably not going to see it.
Probably not. I guess something we should get into very briefly as well is the novella it was based on. Now, I've actually never read Who Goes There. It was first published in 1938, and I should read it at some point just because I love this movie so much.
Honestly, I'm surprised you haven't.
Yeah, well, I've been resistant to reading it because I've always heard it described as a very blatant ripoff of, like, arguably H.P. Lovecraft's best story, which was At the Mountains of Madness. Because, you know, it's all about, like, expedition discovers ancient alien horror beneath the ice of Antarctica. And At the Mountains of Madness was published 2 years earlier. So, you know, it's kind of like, well, this amazing short story by Lovecraft went completely unnoticed in its time, but then this one guy who did notice it wrote a far more successful book by kind of ripping it off. Now, to be fair, the core premise of, like, shape-shifting aliens is quite different. Sort of. At least it's employed in a very different way in the Campbell novella. But I just thought it was worth noting that Who Goes There has very Lovecraftian roots. John Carpenter is a diehard Lovecraft fan. You know, he has taken part in documentaries that have been made about Lovecraft, and he said he grew up on Lovecraft stories, which, wow. But, you know, so that if we talk a lot about, like, Lovecraftian horror and cosmic horror, it's because this movie is super rooted in it.
Oh, definitely. If you want to be pedantic about it, you could say that about any, like, Eldritch horror kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
But not to take that away from anything, I'm sure Who Goes There is good. I mean, as of 2019, there's a sequel being written by John Gregory Betancourt. I don't know who the hell that is.
Yeah, who cares? You know, it's...
He wrote some Star Trek novels.
He's a professional fanfic writer.
A little bit.
Anyway, on the topic of other cosmic horror films, this might be the best cosmic horror movie I've ever seen. The only other contender is Annihilation, in my opinion.
Annihilation is really good.
Yeah, we will talk about that someday.
We have yet to see that Color Out of Space film still.
That is true. I've heard pretty mixed things about it, but I do want to watch it at some point.
Because I've heard Nicolas Cage is really, like, actually really good in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's... Yeah, I mean, he's a good actor when, you know, he does stuff that he's suited to. The problem is when he would be in any terrible movie just because he needed the check, you know.
Gotta make that money, man.
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
Yeah, why do you think we're podcasting again?
Dude, we lose money by podcasting. We are earning negative dollars.
Yeah, I actually just signed up to put us on Audible. We don't even have the Audible, like, their ad yet.
Whack.
Podcasting is about to hit an event horizon.
Yep. Anyway, that's a cosmic horror for another time.
Sure is, bud.
Yep. So why don't we get into our actual thoughts on the movie? I think it's pretty apparent from what I just said that I really like this movie. Dakota, what's your, like, general feeling about the thing?
General? I loved it. And I say that as a guy, like I've said on the podcast before, I'm a bit of what you might call a bitch when it comes to horror movies. I'm not a huge horror movie fan, but I gotta say, I absolutely loved The Thing.
Yeah, I feel similarly. I love reading horror, but I really struggle with watching it. Just tickles a different part of my brain, I guess. But the thing has like genuinely scary moments, but I think the thing that makes it more accessible to us is that it's more about suspense and mood than the outright scares, you know?
It is. There's maybe two jump scares in the entire movie.
Yeah, and they're effective, but they also feel pretty earned.
Oh, definitely.
Particularly.
It's there's there it's a really it's actually a really slow burn for a horror movie.
Oh, very. Yeah, I mean the movie just opens with a like a helicopter just flying across like the Antarctic waste, and it's like a long sequence
And
with just this like dun 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 dun, like this really like simple but kind of eerie music playing behind it.
it's the iconic Carpenter score.
Yeah.
And it's three Norwegians in a helicopter shooting at a dog.
Yeah, just for the record, like this movie is 40 years old. We are going to talk spoilers. I'm sorry. If you haven't seen The Thing and you're into horror, you should watch it. Even if you're not into horror and you just like good filmmaking, you should watch The Thing because it's really well done. Like The Thing is often lauded as like the pinnacle of practical effects. It's certainly the best practical effects I've ever seen
It sure
in
the
any
fuck
movie.
is.
I think The Thing looks great. There's a few things that are a little cheesy, or like, this was my second viewing, and I think it was also yours. And on my second viewing, I did notice a little bit of stuff that like looked a little weird, but most of it is like amazing. There's that guy where like it's like two heads melted together, you
Yes,
know,
I
and they're
was
like
gonna bring that
screaming.
up.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, that. Again, this is 1982. Like, production on this film, we should get into that at some point, because the production on this is kind of wild. Like, going through a bunch of different directors and directions and shit. But the practical effects, of course, that like we said, that two-headed thing man creature, there's actually a lot of close-ups on it, which is an interesting way to look at that, because usually you like to not look at your props so closely, I guess,
Yeah.
but I'm sure Carpenter was obviously proud of it. I mean, it's in his fucking house.
Yeah.
It's honestly, it's beautiful practical effects work, and like I've expressed down here before, I'm a bit of a nerd for like practical effects stuff. Like, my favorite movie is Mad Max Fury Road, and that's like the first movie to do a bunch of practical effects stuff since like Jurassic Park, I think.
Yeah.
Oh god damn it. It's beautiful, dude. It's gory, it's unsettling, it's creepy, it's another synonym for weird. It's
It's disgusting.
it is. It's just unsettling. It's hard to
Yeah.
explain.
The guy who did most of the practical effects, I do think he had other people come in and help him eventually. But his name was Rob Bottin. He was 23 years old when he did the effects for this movie.
God. Look what we're doing at 23.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and one thing I would say too about the practical effects, even when there are moments where you're like, oh, that's a puppet, or that's stop motion, or, that's like
That's just a
a painting.
statue. That's something. Yeah.
Yeah. Even when it's obvious that that's what's happening, it's still impressive enough on a technical level that even if it's not like completely immersively convincing to me, I still have to go, wow, like how did they do that? Like I can see how they did it, but like it's so like well done and so complex. In particular, the scene with am I thinking of the defibrillation scene where like, yeah, there's the defibrillation scene where the head like rips off and turns into a spider thing and
Yes.
that's amazing. There's also one of the corpses like rears up to this, or is that the scene where they're doing the blood test and like one of them gets really tall and their neck gets like really long and stuff?
Yes, that's one. Yeah, one of them. It turns out the blood test actually works, and oh shit, it's not Windows. It's I don't know. It's one of the
Isn't it the stoner
characters.
guy? Or no, it's not him.
No, because he
Whatever.
no,
It doesn't matter.
whatever. It's the point is,
It looks great.
it looks fucking awesome.
One of the worst ones, one of the grossest ones, is just the dogs. When it's in the kennel and you know something's about to happen, and then this dog that gets brought into the kennel just basically starts like melting and falling apart and turning into this thing. I think one of the grossest things about that scene is it's just like spraying goo on the dogs, and it's like we don't know what that does, and it doesn't really matter. It's just there to be gross and convey the sense to you that every time the thing transforms and like reveals its true self, it's just this like blob of viscera, and it never looks the same way twice. It's just this, it's a much more like grounded and biological twist on the idea of an incomprehensible eldritch horror.
Yeah.
In Lovecraft stuff, something like Cthulhu would be incomprehensible because it was like made of a different kind of matter that didn't obey physics the same way we did, and we just couldn't like sense, our senses couldn't fully comprehend it. With the thing, it's like this literally like constantly shaping, cracking, bleeding, breaking, twisting like mass of flesh and bone and guts.
And you very clearly see it every time. You get the full view. You kind of get to, you almost get to kind of put yourself in there.
Yeah, it's the amount. Yeah, I mean the amount of craft that went into it, we've already said, is amazing. But even just on a conceptual level, I think it's really cool. And some of that might be thanks to the novella. Probably is, because I believe the novella was pretty faithfully adapted in this movie, from what I understand. Another interesting thing to note about this movie is the characters are kind of non-characters, like they all, most of them fit some kind of like film archetype or storytelling archetype. Like MacReady is your like generic, like no nonsense, dry humor, reluctant action hero kind of character. You can maybe infer that he has a history in the military, but like he's just like a helicopter pilot. I believe in the book it was established that he was second in command. But like he's a character you don't know much about, but I still don't really consider that a detriment to the movie because I feel like he just kind of, it just works. Like it just slots into place and you don't have to ask any questions because the characters aren't the point of interest. The point of interest is that the thing could be any of them at any time.
Exactly. There's not a lot of, this is gonna sound bad, but I promise it's not. There's not a lot of development to the characters. They're very one-dimensional.
Yes, very.
But
But
that doesn't matter because all the emphasis is on the thing, like Brian said.
yeah.
It's the characters are just there to have somebody to interact with the thing.
Yeah. And if you got too attached to any one of them, I think that might deflate some of the tension because, like, if Kurt Russell's character got all of this deep development, I would think to myself more than I already was, like, well, this guy's gonna make it out. Like, this guy's not the thing,
Yeah, and like having seen enough movies, I expected, the big
Well,
heroic, like,
yeah.
oh, we finally did it, we beat him, we're gonna be all right.
Yeah, and you do kind of have that, but it ends on that very dour note where MacReady and what's his name, Childs?
Yeah, Childs.
Okay, they're basically just left sitting in the snow drinking their last bottle of J&B,
Ah, yes, J&B whiskey.
because, like, either one of them could be infected, and even if they weren't, like, they've blown up their entire facility. There is no shelter from the cold, basically.
Yeah, they're both waiting to freeze to death, waiting for one of the other ones to turn.
Yeah. Now, something that I do think is a little off, like on a conceptual level, is the actual mechanics of the thing are a little weird. And it took me until my second viewing to get a better grasp on it, because the thing is not actually, like, a single entity, or maybe you are meant to think of it as one, but, like, it infects people, and then the people that are infected become like it.
How do we explain it? It kind of assimilates other biological creatures into its, like, physiology.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like you almost have to assume that it is one being, because the thing that is Wilford Brimley at the end also has, like, a bit of dog monster in it, which resembles, you know, the dogs from the kennels, which were destroyed. Although, there is one dog monster that gets away, and I've never been able to keep track of where that one ends up. Like, is that meant to have met up with Wilford Brimley, or have infected Wilford Brimley?
Oh, the one that goes up through the vent after the kennel, or what?
Yeah, yeah.
I assume that one ends up becoming one of the first guys to die, which I can't think of any of the names right now.
Gotcha.
God, just real quick, I wanted to mention it when we talked about the dogs at first. That kennel scene is, it might be my favorite scene in the movie.
I was actually going to ask you, like what are some of your favorite parts?
Oh, the kennel scene is great. It starts off, you know, they let the dog thing in, and it just lays down in the middle of the kennel and just stares at the wall. And they give it that. Yeah. They give it that for 2-3 minutes. It's a real slow, like, it cuts to the other dogs. They're looking. They're like, hey, what the fuck is this thing doing? Haha. And then, of course, it starts changing and transforming, and the dogs are freaking out. They're running around. They're jumping. I don't know how the fuck they did it. They got one dog trained to chew through a fucking fence.
Yeah.
Oh,
the peanut butter on the fucking.
I'm sure it was something like that. Yeah, but
yeah,
the dogs react to the dog thing like the humans react to the human thing. It's so fucking so cool.
It's the best dog acting I've ever seen. I'll say that.
That's true. That's right, dude.
Yeah.
They say never work with children or dogs, but I want to work with the thing dogs.
The only thing that mars that scene for me very slightly is that the big dog monster that does escape, I think, is maybe the worst looking effect in the movie. Like, it looks, I think that's aged worse than almost anything else in the movie. That might just be a personal thing, but
it's all right. It's not as, like, recognizable as the other ones are, like the two-headed, like, sculpture and the,
yeah,
and the long neck one, but, like, it's still, and maybe that's because it's and I think what that is, it's just because it's a different, like, biology. Of course, it's not humans, it's dogs, so it's got to pull off from different genus and all that. Or it could just be a stylistic thing. I have no idea. I wasn't there.
I think for me, it just worries me that, like, or not worries me, but, like, the thing that I think makes me less crazy about the one is it doesn't look quite as fluid as the rest of it. It looks very, like, stiff. I don't know. It's not a big point to dwell on. The rest of the scene is amazing.
It's very obvious that it's just, like, a big mold designed to hold somebody under it so they can get the tentacles out or the dog head out or whatever you want.
Well, I'm specifically just talking about, like, the forearms that reach up into the vent and then the monster pulls itself up. The rest of the dog in that scene looks amazing. Like, I love when, like, its face opens up and the skull falls out, and it's got, like, this flower face where the petals are made of dog tongues.
Fuck yeah, dude.
That stuff's amazing. I'm just saying, after they torch everything and you see it escape, that shot does not look very good to me. I think probably my favorite part of the movie is when I can't remember his name, but he's the ginger guy. I think he's a doctor.
Oh,
He
Dr.
like
Copper?
stu I don't know, but he like stumbles out into the snow, and when they catch up to him, he has these huge like spindly claw hands almost, but like just like something's happening to this guy, and he releases the like creepiest howl or scream or cry that I've heard in a long time, and just like looks at them, and then they torch him, and you hear like that scream like fade away.
It's a very haunting screen because it's a pretty low, guttural alien scream, but then they mix in the actual actor's scream in there. So it fluctuates and it's very unsettling.
And that's one of the areas where I get a little like I should just say, first of all, I love that scene because I think, again, that's playing to the greatest strengths of the movie, which are not jump scares, it's suspense, tone, mood. You know, like that is a slow, creepy scene. It makes you shiver, but it's not like, ah! Like it doesn't make you jump out of your seat. And I think that's where the thing really, really shines. I would say though that that's again one of the scenes where I question the mechanics of the thing. Because like that's a case where the transition seems to be slow, and the doctor guy almost seems kind of confused and bewildered by what's happening to him. Like he doesn't go out of his way to attack anybody. He runs from the base because somebody saw him getting attacked. So he runs from the base and he's just like kneeling in the snow, like looking at his hands, which are all fucked up, which I guess could be your indication that he's transitioning from human to thing and he's like watching this horrible transformation. But that doesn't seem to be a thing that happens to the other things. You know, like the transition seems completely seamless for the rest of them. And you could, you know, well, I was going to say you could chalk that up to, well, it is all one single being, and this was the first time it infected a human, but that's not true because there's that whole other base,
The
which is full of
Norwegians.
people, the Norwegians, who already dealt with the thing. So, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, the logic confuses me a little bit sometimes. Like, I feel like the rules aren't always super well established, but I still think that's probably my favorite scene in the movie. Just very creepy, very memorable. But speaking of the rules of the movie, I think we I the worst scene in the movie for me has got to be the scene where Wilford Brimley is at his computer and it's just like explaining the plot to him, basically.
Yeah, that definitely could have been done a little better, a little more nuanced. Side note, I love seeing Wilford Brimley not in a diabetes commercial. It turns out Wilford Brimley's actually a really good actor.
We'll talk about the back half of this scene in a minute where
Because,
Wilford Brimley goes ape shit, but
yes, God damn it, that's good, but that first part is bad.
yeah, that's the thing. Like the first part, it's just like the antithesis of show don't tell, where they're like, how about we just tell you everything because we don't know how to convey the rules to the audience and they're not already clear. Which I would say is maybe the biggest flaw of the movie is just that the rules of the creature are not innately obvious.
Yeah,
Or
and
at least the movie didn't believe that they were, and it went out of its way to like further explain. But beyond just it being like an obvious exposition dump in the middle of like a really well-paced and like suspenseful movie, the technology of it was unbelievable in the 80s, and it's still unbelievable now. Like, what computer program are you using to do this? You know, like what data is any of this the simulation based on? You know,
yeah, because
it
we.
would have been more effective to just have Wilford Brimley speculating instead of having this exposition scene that's both boring and leaves me questioning the exposition I'm receiving, you know.
Yeah, and also, like, who did all the fancy effects and shit for that? Because it's the 80s, man. Like, we were still on DOS. We still had, like, IBM clones, man. We didn't. The Commodore was still a thing.
Yeah, and speaking of 80s effects, the fucking terrible UFO at the beginning.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's the worst effect in the movie, I think.
Computer effects have come a long way.
Yes, they have. Now, the back half of this Wilford Brimley scene is where Wilford Brimley realizes what's happening, and then he goes apeshit and starts smashing and shooting everything. Our favorite, most quotable line from the movie is, "I kill you!" And then he just takes a fucking shot at fucking Kurt Russell or whoever.
He's got a revolver. Wilford Brimley
Yeah.
with a fire axe, taking a fire axe to like a bank of computers. It's like a wall of like
Yeah.
70s computers.
Yeah, well, and there's just something funny specifically about the diabetes guy holding a fucking gun like he's never held a gun in his life and going, "I'll kill you."
It's incredible.
Turns out diabetes wasn't the real killer. It was Wilford Brimley.
Diabetes was trying to protect us.
No. I apologize to anybody who has diabetes.
Oh, yeah, and apologies to the estate of Wilford Brimley.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, that stuff's all great. I do think the movie descends a little bit into cheesiness. The moment at the end where like the big thing, which was Wilford Brimley, goes apeshit, and Kurt Russell throws his stick of dynamite and goes, "Fuck you too," is a little like cheesy 80s action star. Doesn't really do it for me. I feel like they wanted a cleverer or more satisfying one-liner and couldn't really think of one, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure Carpenter to let him like just riff.
Yeah, I mean, they've worked together a ton. I'm sure that there's plenty of freedom for Kurt Russell in those roles. But yeah, that was rough. But oh, what was I just gonna say? Oh, another thing, you know, the big reveal at the end was that Wilford Brimley was also infected. He was a thing, and he winds up being the big thing at the end. But this raises some further questions, which is that, like, for a long time, Wilford Brimley seems not to be infected. Where, like, he goes out of his way to smash all that stuff. You know, he goes out of his way to, you know, destroy the helicopters and stuff. Which it's established, like, at the time, it's implied that he's doing this because he wants to prevent the thing from escaping, but then later when they find the little UFO beneath the shed they locked him in, it's kind of implied he dismantled the helicopters and other things in an attempt to like build a ship to get home. Unless maybe you're thinking, oh, he went back to the helicopters and salvaged stuff later. But I'm just saying, like, Wilford Brimley does the most to stop the thing, besides maybe Kurt Russell. And then in the end, it turns out he was the thing probably almost from the beginning. I assume he got infected while he was doing those autopsies, which were not very sanitary.
Oh yeah, no, he definitely caught some thing.
It's also possible that the dog creature found him and, you know, merged with him, I guess, but
Licked him or something.
yeah. Because he does have that dog part later when he gets big.
Well, I think the big thing, like king thing, we'll call it. The way it works, I think, is that the thing is one creature, but it can split off and like infect other things to bring that material, I guess, the best way to call it,
Yeah.
back to the host.
Yeah, that's how I used to think of it too, but it's also not just like, it's not just like they're like sucking stuff in and becoming a bigger, blobbier body, because like the computer scene explains that people are getting infected on a cellular level, almost as if it's a disease. So I think what you're saying is probably accurate, but again, it's never made super clear. And I should say, that's never affected my enjoyment of the movie that much. It's something that always bothers me when I watch it, but the atmosphere, the effects, the tension are just so good that that stuff, I can still enjoy the hell out of the movie even when that stuff doesn't totally sit right with me. So at the end, Kurt Russell, or I should say MacReady and Childs are the last survivors. They're sitting in the snow. And there's basically this kind of lingering question of, is one of them the thing? Could one of them be infected? Could one of them be infected and not know it? Has one of them been infected all along? Apparently this is a really heated debate for fans of the movie, that like people think either Childs or MacReady was the thing at the end. I personally have never gotten that vibe. Like, the way the movie leaves it is either of them could be, both of them could be, one of them could be, or neither of them could be. You know, like, I don't think the movie gives you any really explicit teases that one or the other definitively is the thing. It just leaves you with that question, like, could one of them be?
Like,
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you finish your thing. I was jumping to what I think.
Okay. I was just going to say, of course, the final implication is that they've destroyed the thing as best as they can. They've destroyed their shelter in the process. And now the thing they were trying to avoid all along, which is letting the thing refreeze and then be discovered later, is seemingly, like, if one of the two of them is infected, then there's nothing they can do to stop it. You know, like, they will freeze and be discovered eventually, especially when this presumably government facility is destroyed. So that's why I say it's a bit of a nihilistic ending, because it implies that both or either, like, I mean, both of our remaining heroes are going to be dead, whether because of the thing or the cold. And it's also entirely possible one of them is infected and they didn't actually stop anything, you know?
Yeah. Now, on that note, I choose to believe that neither of them are infected.
Yeah.
Mostly because Carpenter has a real boner for both Kurt Russell and Keith David, who is Childs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really all I got. It's just, I just don't think they're infected, because Carpenter uses Kurt Russell and uses Keith David in all this shit. He's going to give them bigger, more important roles. I don't think obviously they're both going to die at the end. They're both going to freeze to death. But
yeah.
I don't think either of them are the thing.
See, I personally don't think that would really have much bearing on it, because either way, at the end of the movie, neither of them is confirmed to be the thing. But regardless, one thing that's slightly interesting is, like, at some point, MacReady's, like, torn-up uniform is discovered. And that raises a lot of questions, because one of the rules that is established is that when they transform, they shred the clothes that they were wearing. And so there's this question of, did MacReady transform and is the thing now? Or did the thing shred his clothes to raise suspicion for, like, the quote-unquote leader of the group, you know? But so, considering that Wilford Brimley's character actively works to stop the thing from spreading early in the movie and then is revealed to have been the thing later in the movie, I think it's possible that you could infer that, oh, that jumpsuit was from MacReady and he has been the thing all along, and he's just been trying to erase all suspicion while letting the rest of the group get picked off. I don't think that makes... I think there's a couple problems with that mindset, because A, if you follow that logic, then I don't know if it's reasonable to think of the thing as one entity, because he actively kills many of them. Also, he passes the blood test, which, if we're to assume that it really works, which it sure seems to, then I think you have to assume that he was at least not infected at that point in the movie, which is after the jumpsuit. So I think, most realistically, if Kurt Russell is infected, it's because of his very close encounter with the big thing, Daddy Thing, at the end. Childs disappears for part of the end of the movie and just kind of pops up again. And his story is that he thought he saw Wilford Brimley, I think he's called Blair.
Yeah, Dr. Blair.
But A, he could be lying, or B, it's entirely possible he did see Blair, and that is how he got infected, and now he's here, you know? But I mean, like, his coat and stuff isn't shredded, so again, I feel like it's kind of foolhardy to try and figure this out, because I think it's very deliberately ambiguous. I don't even know if any proper hints were laid to suggest one or the other, personally.
Well, damn, Brian, when you said there was a hot debate, I didn't know it was this hot. Like,
yeah. Wow. There's fucking layers to this.
Yeah, there is. God damn. What a filmmaker.
With that said, I think we're going to start wrapping up here. The thing is another one of those things that's slightly hard to talk about in depth, because for me, I love, like, the way the movie feels. You know, that's such a big part of it for me that I don't feel the need to go super in-depth on, like, story beats or characters or the overall plot. So I think we've pretty much gotten across everything we wanted to say. And beyond that, I would just say, go watch the movie. It's really good. And it would be a great, you know, Halloween treat, I guess, if you could call it that.
Seriously, go out and find this. Like, it's on... We watch it on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
If you just Google The Thing 1982, it's on YouTube. Like, it's also on the Internet Archive. Like, you can just stream it, like, wherever.
Hell yeah. Do you have any other thoughts you want to add, Dakota? Or should we just wrap this boy up?
God bless Rob Barrett?
Botan, I think his name was.
Botanist? Practical effects guy. God bless you. He retired in 2014. Dude's a fucking visionary.
Yeah, that shit's amazing. And, you know, with the remake, their original plan was to do it all practical effects as, like, an homage to the quality of effects in the original. And then I think the studio got cold feet at the last minute, and they redid it all in CG.
Oh, of course they did. So, it's a fucking Blumhouse film. They're not going to take the time for CG. Yeah. Of course not. It's a Blumhouse film. They're not going to take the time to do, you know, proper practical effects. It's for as good as Blumhouse has been to horror movies in the sense of, like, getting them out and getting good ones out, like Paranormal Activity and other ones. I don't know. I don't watch horror movies. Just, man, when they're good, they're pretty good. And when they're bad, they're Happy Death Day.
Or the Bye Bye Man.
Oh, the Bye, yeah. Or Slender. Like, some of these fucking effects are just garbage.
Anyway, we'll just leave on that note. Bring back practical effects. They can be really great.
Take the time. Put the effort in.
Yeah, go watch The Thing. It's a great movie. And we will see you guys next time. So please leave a review, a like, share this with a friend. And we will be back next week to talk about some more spooky, scary October stuff. I've been Brian.
And I'm pretty sure I'm still Dakota.
Hopefully. Anyway, fuck off and goodbye.
Have a nice day.
Don't.